Okay, the best time is over. The fun is over. Thank you. Just to write me an email. Yeah. No, it's not affordable in Canada at the moment, but we bring it over. We have to do it. Good. So maybe we can close the door on the back. It gives me a better feeling. Thank you. So, the seven principles of social business. You see the original paper, and it was done this year in Davos. I went on a journey with Professor Yunus. And you also see at the top is six. When he gives me the six, we prepared a lot of principles. You say, oh, he makes it very simple. And at the end, I show him, oh, can I put one add on? And then I did the seventh. He smiled and said, yes, it's a very important one. So let's try to have a deeper understanding about the DNA of social business and of to have to understand. So first of all is the compliance with the seven principles of Grameen social business. And it's always, so if you'd like to design for your NGO, if you'd like to design for your staff or with your partner, or if you want to set up a garage, it's always to focus on the elementary needs of the people. Sometimes we just, our mind blows away, you know, and it goes on something what the people doesn't need. It's always important to see the elementary needs of the people. The whole reviving of the rule of the villages, we just, all of us, know what an enormous challenge we have on the urbanization, how many people suffer in the big cities and they doesn't want to go back because they doesn't want to be loser in the whole stuff. They don't want to have an they doesn't find a way back home to the rural area. Then, of course, to see the whole ownership questions, and this is what myself fascinate on the whole stuff, the fascination about to creating ownership. It's the Grameen Bank is not owned by Professor Yunus. It's owned by the poor people. So the whole ownership questions, and then, of course, the most beautiful power on earth, the entrepreneurship power. We are all here, and we are all entrepreneurs. And this is what we, sometimes our system teach us something different. But each one of us doesn't need a job. Especially each one in this room can create jobs. So is there such an important power to see the entrepreneur power, the trust to the people? Yes, you can handle your life. You can make your life. You are able to do it. This is an enormous role. And of course, to start the best partnership. Because we are not singular beings, we need partnerships. And these partnerships can have many different roles. So to see the seven principles and the DNA, and then the field where we can work on the social business objects. Of course, is the economic and financial service, where we see microcredit as a mother of social business. The food, water, energy, healthcare, education, and I repeat and repeat this, art and music and sports. In the mess where we are, on healthcare, on climate change, on energy crisis, on food crisis, I totally believe we don't come out without art or without music. Music, sports and art is not a luxury good. It's a daily need for the people. So many times when I do my journeys to the people, and I never forgot this incredible moment this year when I was in Ethiopia. At the end, I ask the women, when I talk a lot about microphones, how you survive. And then one woman stand up and make a song and dance, and you say, this song and this dance gives me day by day the hope to go ahead next day. So our mindset is thinking art and sports, I put it together, is just a luxury good. Definitely not. It's such an important issue. Yesterday night, I talked to Lorette about the joy of health. You know, it's the joy of health is a real mission what we have if you talk about healthcare. These sectors, you see, there are very commitment and very clear. We didn't do these sectors into the fields of the Millennium Development Goals, but it fits perfectly in. So this, and it's beautiful because if you see the UN Millennium Goals, this was out of a very positive, enthusiastic feeling, you know. So it was done to show the world will change. And then we had 2001 and the 9/11. We have 2003 with the Iraqi war, and then we have 2008 with the financial crisis, and we lose our good aims, what we have, and it's just shadowed by different stuff. But still, all our crises, all our stuff going on. But still, also, a lot of people are on the right track to change the world. I guess we are more than 300 million people in the development area who doesn't accept what's going on today. They really want to do the commitment the whole life into say, yes, I don't want to be part of a problem, I want to be part of a solution. And especially in the generation, what I call the ability generation. This is the young students and the young men and women who are born after the 80s. They're thinking totally different to us. I see it in every universities around the world. They have a different mindset. Their aim is not to build up a next multinational company. Their aim is just finding solutions to have a more justice world, having a better world, having a more safe world, and don't be any more part of this game, and don't be any more part of this problem. They want to be part of a solution. So, to give you an understanding what we try to do on the Grameen Social, on the Grameen Creative Lab, it's this what we do today is, of course, to have a maximum of interact with the people, the incubation, and, of course, the creation of social business. We mostly step out if the whole stuff goes into performance. So on the interact, we do public stuff. We have all the media importance. Our aim to 2015 is we want to reach around 2 billion people on the media. And may you think now, oh, it's a big ambitions. But in our jobs before, we know how to create awareness for David Beckham. So, and if David Beckham changed from a soccer club from Manchester to Madrid, it's only a system to achieve 2 billion people. So it's a system how to get the message done with 2 billion people. And I guess in 2015 and today, of the end of the day, I will talk more about the strategy 2015. We will show you how we come there. And of course, on the organization stuff, we're building up different Grameen houses now, who is like a hub. We are on the way to establish like a Grameen think headquarter. And of course, we have a foundation of Yunus in the center of Europe. This is what we try to achieve. But we are much more faster than we was thinking in the beginning. And on the incubation process, we have now 21, we will lead 21 experimental into global social business. And to create, we would like to set up 50 joint ventures on the stuff. And our aim at 2015 is to have a fund, a social business money, from $2 to $3 billion. And I have to say, yes, we are on the way, we are on the track. It looks very promising, we will do it. And of course, we work on the certification. That's the goals what we have. And at the beginning, we was thinking how social business can be not only done on the corporations, we saw the NGOs, we saw the investors, the public sector, the academic, and at this time we call it young revolutioner, or the young responsibilities, and the Entrepreneur Plus. Then we talk more and more to the universities, and later on you will see the same wheel, how it's changed. Basically, we start with the big companies. It has different reasons. You just give me a good question on it to say, hey, what's happened if you lose money? All these companies who are now in joint venture with us, they have hundreds of different small companies, and many of them was not making money from the first year on. So there are all what you need is to have a strong will to say, even through a very difficult time I go through for 2 or 3 years, you know. Many innovations was not done on the first stuff. Remember, even Steve Jobs had a lot of problems with the first touching system in the 90s, and then he have to give it up, and he comes back 5 years later, but he never gave up his dream of creating something what we call now the iPod Touch or the iPod, and it's very successful. So we use the power from the companies how to don't give up. So we have now joint ventures with Danone, with Veolia. We are on the way, we have it with Intel, and we have it with BASF. And the beautiful stuff is we have it now signed with Otto, with Adidas. We are negotiating with Volkswagen, SAP, Pfizer, General Electric Healthcare, Mayo Clinic, Google, Deutsche Telekom. And for one example, with Adidas, it's a beautiful example because it was a personal experience of myself in the 90s. I was in Switzerland, and I went into a local government to get a permit for our theater. So, I was running barefoot. And I was running barefoot, and it was the only moment in my life when I had a problem with police, because there's a law out who tells you it's forbidden to go barefoot into a government place. So I had to pay 100 Swiss francs or to go for one night in the prison. So I chose the prison, and it was in the small village. It's called Thun, and the prison was an old castle. It was a beautiful night and non-forgettable moment. So, but later on, I spent 7 years in India, and I saw so many people, and especially so many women, who can't afford shoes, you know, or the shoes who are producing is far away to have a quality. So when I start with the social business idea, I remember always this idea, and was thinking so many women in the world doesn't have a right, you know. The children can take away, they have a violence issue with the husband, or something, and they have no shoes, they have no rights. They have no dignity. So we start on the issue of shoes, and then we did, like a business do, we did clear research. We had 9 people from Adidas working nearly a year, and then we go to Bangladesh with them, and what we find out was a total surprise. Of course, the whole dignity stays, the whole stuff, but there was a real healthcare issue. There is something what they call the hookworm. Somebody aware about it? And a terrible disaster for these people, you know. And the most shoes who are done, who cost less than $1 or $2, they are so miserable from the quality, you know. So the people buy a shoe from the small money what they have, and the experience what they have, I wear them for 5 or 6 days, and then they are gone. All what they want to do is to suck my money, even from myself, who have no money anymore, even with children, you know. That just gives you the idea, you wish to have shoes, because believe me, I did it by my own experience. I have 1 year run without shoes. Never the pain stops without shoes. It's a romantic dreaming of us to think, oh, they're always running barefoot. The most diseases, the most healthcare issues comes via barefoot running, you know. And so to have a good shoe. So at the end, we find out the shoe is not only about being part of dignity, having a nice shoes. The shoe is a real, real enormous healthcare stuff. So we are on the way now to create a very affordable shoe and to give a guarantee on the shoe. And after 6 months, if you give the shoe back, you get some penny back. And this material will be used for make your house waterproof for the monsoon. So we totally think different. We have so much joy. And this will be done by the brand, maybe Reebok or maybe Adidas, but it will be done by Adidas owns Reebok. So Adidas is not so much known in Bangladesh. Reebok, everybody knows because of cricket. So we have to see. And we will brand it. And we will say, this is a quality. This is a promise of qualities, and this shoe works. So this is one example what we're going for. And the same is we're talking at the moment with Boehringer Ingelheimer about different trucks, what we can do. We have Otto Group. You don't know Otto Group here, but Otto Group is the biggest mail order company in the world. And after Amazon, the second biggest internet shop. So it's an enormous impact. We're just creating with them a new fabric of the future in Bangladesh. Later on, I will tell you. So we start with the cooperation, and it has a special reason. And this 3 minutes movie show you why we start with corporations.
150 years ago, the business corporation was a relatively insignificant institution. Today, it is all pervasive, like the church, the monarchy, and the Communist Party in other times and places. The corporation is today's dominant institution. This documentary examines the nature, evolution, impacts, and possible futures of the modern business corporation. Initially given a narrow legal mandate, what has allowed today's corporation to achieve such extraordinary power and influence over our lives? We begin our inquiry as scandals threaten to trigger a wide debate about the lack of public control over big corporations.
I do think there is an overhang over the market of distrust. Listen, 95% or some percent, huge percentage of the business community are honest and reveal all their assets. Got compensation programs that are balanced, but there are some bad acts.
The media debate about the basic operating principles of the corporate world was quickly reduced to a game of follow the leader.
I still happen to think the United States is the greatest place in the world to invest. We have some shakeups that are going on with a few bad apples.
And spies, insiders and outsiders. We present the corporation as a paradox, an institution that creates great wealth but causes enormous and often hidden harms.
Corporation is like a family unit. People in a corporation work together for a common end.
The eagle, soaring, clear-eyed, competitive, prepared to strike, but not a vulture. Noble, visionary, majestic, that people can believe in and be inspired by, that creates such a lift that it soars. I could see that being a good logo for the principal company. Okay, guys, enough bullshit.
Ninety percent of us doesn't trust them at all. No? We live in a society in the world, in Germany, I don't know how it's in Canada, but I guess it will be very similar. 90% of us have a total mistrust about the corporations. So we have a relation like we are daily connected with them, we are daily with them, they have a business, and we are the customer, and we are the stakeholder. But our relation is totally destroyed. It's like a big crash. However, we have to find a way to live together, because definitely we need big corporations, like small and medium companies. So we have to find a new way, and we have to find for the next decade a way how we work together. What's their role? What's our role? And how we all can work together. That's why we make very strategically the first role to say, let's start a very clear symbol in the big corporations. And every corporation, over 20,000 people, is just a mirror of our society. And if you read all the mission and vision, behavior and values of the companies, you know, you can talk to the 30 biggest company in the States as well as the 30 biggest company in Europe. They all have a vision, they all have a mission, they all have a behavior, they all have a values. And they all have brand values and the brand promising. Toyota, you know. Everything reads perfect. There's nothing wrong. So what we have to do is to guide them, then they achieve the goal, what they want to do. And we have to find, be critical with the companies, but also somehow to work with them, to use their knowledge, to use the enormous capacity of these companies and transform it in the next stuff. Who knows about the Ashoka followers? Ashoka? Who hear the name Ashoka before? Okay. So Ashoka was, I always try to explain the beautiful story of Ashoka. Ashoka was a very cruel leader in India. He was cruel like Hitler. He kills people and he was known as the most terror leader what we can imagine. He built the first time what we call India. So India is done from a river, it's called Indus, and the society on the Indus, who is basically now in Pakistan, this what he designed as India the first time. And Ashoka was a terrible leader, but suddenly Ashoka turns around totally. He comes in contact with what they call Dharma, and he changed. In a couple of years, the mindset of this leader changed totally, and he was only there for the goodwill for the people. That's why if you see the symbol of India, you see the three lions, it's the symbol of Ashoka, and down you see three wheels, it's the symbol of Dhamma, the wheel, and it's changed around. If we see now the history of industry goods, I was once when I walking around with Professor Yunus, and every journey I try to have also a philosophical talk with him. So I went with him to Los Angeles this year. We had a walk on the beach for 2 hours, and I asked him, Professor Yunus, we are poor because we are so many people. And then he gives me an answer and they say, no, no, Hans, we are not poor because we are so many people. We are so many people because we are poor. And then he gives me the order, try to find out why the whole things grow, at least in the economic issue. So then it's normal if we are poor, we have more children. It's a natural reaction, you know. It's nothing to do because we have nothing to do, and that's why we make more love in the heart. It's just we trust the next generation that will bring us out. It's an instinct of us to say, oh, I feel not good. I make 5, 6, 7, 9 to 10 children. So it's a natural reaction of us if we have nothing. And the biggest challenge what we have is how we survive together with 7 billion people, how we will survive with 9 billion people on this planet. So, and then I go back and I never studied before. I went out of school with 14 because we are on a very poor family, so, and I create a business very young to feed my family. So I go out of school when I was 14 and I set up the first business, and all the money what I make I give it to my family. It was a very natural habit. So, but after this message I go back and I try to read books and stuff like this, and I find out the whole industry age starts 70, 70, 70, with a man on the cotton business. You know, in Europe we had an enormous demand on cotton because we didn't like the wool, we didn't like the line, we didn't like the whole stuff. So we had already, on a very cruel way, you know, we bring people to South and North America on the slave to build up cotton because we had an enormous demand on cotton because it was so comfortable. Each one of us wear cotton. Okay. And but we have the knowledge from the Egypt and from the people of Bengal how to wave cotton, you know, very, very precisely. But we didn't have this what we call a spindle. You know what's a spindle? This, okay. So it was always done by person. So somebody, Mr. Ock, invent a spindle machine. And then suddenly this man was able in Manchester This man was able to do the work for 36 people. One person can do the same stuff on 36 people. And because England is England and they have a patent and the stuff, so this man becomes one of the most richest guy. It goes into history about Manchester capitalism. What was behind the story? Where the cotton was growing, how the cotton was growing, and now I tell you a very sad story, what I find out. The Manchester fabrics, you know, they went to India. It was only, I imagine, a little bit storytelling, so don't count every word like it is, but two gentlemen from England, went to India in the Gulf of Bengal, to Calcutta, Chittagong, and Dhaka. And then they make an agreement. They say, gentlemen, we talk together. Sorry, all the women have to leave the room because on religion reasons I can't talk to women. So only gentlemen in a gentleman club, we talk together. I bring new gold, I bring something, you know, I bring a navigator, I bring different stuff with you, and we make a contract, a trading contract, to say, sign me here, only the cotton, the fabrics of Manchester can sell in your country. You sign this, I come back after 4 years, I bring Scottish whiskey, I bring the stuff, I'm talking with you, I'm very friendly, gentleman. Didn't talk to any woman. I never talked to women because it's not nice to talk to women on religion stuff. I go again, we make a stronger contract. I say, yes, let's do it. So in a way, the men make a deal. And in Bangladesh or in Bengal, the people was the best waver in the world. Every woman nearly had something at home to wave. There was so good that the whole sari goes through a ring, you know, to a small place. So they make it like silk, beautiful art. After 10 years, 15 years, I'm coming back, and still your woman doesn't stop to do it. I guess it needs around 20, 25 years. Then I say, hey, get so much trouble for my people. So you signed this contract, now do something. You know what they did? They cut from nearly 1 million women, the plums, to stop waving, just to have a trading law. And this shows us always, business is done always with the acceptance we push somebody in a catastrophe and other people have a benefit. And if you go in the history of business, you can do it in many, many other business. You can do it on the chemical industry, you can do it on the past of our history. It was always accepted. A couple of people have a breakthrough, getting really, really super rich, and other people have a catastrophic situation. And we accept it. And now we have 240 years of doing business together. Of course, we achieved a lot. We achieved the First World War, we achieved the Second World War. And it was always because the poorest of the poorest stand up and they couldn't afford it anymore. And the last 60 years, especially in Europe, I have to say I'm very happy because we achieved the European Union and we at least have 60 years somehow a little bit silence, you know. And I guess now we have the internet, we have the communication, we have the ability generation, we have the next generation that's done. And I totally believe we can transform, like once Ashoka transformed, the industry power. And this is what I think what social business can be done. If social business right is done, for the next decade, the next 10 years, will be the hardest time. We need so much innovation, so much navigation to this things what's going on. We doesn't know how to handle the climate change. We doesn't know how to handle us with 7 billion people. We doesn't know, you know, we have now 25,000 people dying every day out of hunger last year. And this year is 27,000. And we still talk about a crisis. And at the same moment, we have a catastrophe going on. We have not any more 890 million people suffering. We have over 1 billion people. And we still talk about a crisis and not about a catastrophe. So the whole thing, what we call crisis, is again a catastrophe for the most people on this planet. And I see another catastrophe. I just get the real figures out because our national keeper just made a suicide last week. And then we find out in Germany, I don't know how much is in Canada, but 50% of our people in our society suffer about mental health issue. 50%. That means nearly the half of our people get crazy in our society. So isn't this a catastrophe as well? So I think we should be clear. Crisis means something turns in something good. A catastrophe means, from the wording in Greece, something goes really down. And if it doesn't solve the catastrophe, out of this catastrophe, always growing new and new and new and new crisis. So this is why we start very strategically with the corporations and try to find a way. And the way is to share our knowledge, at least a part of the knowledge, to do it and to turn it around and to see this small, clear, white light inside the corporation maybe gives a navigation for the whole management. And this is what we observe, because nearly everybody understood now in 2009 on the border, on the next decade, something has to be done. So this is a project that we do with BASF, and later in the question and answers, I can go a little bit deeper in it. We have this beautiful project with Otto, and the Otto project shows me a hopefully, it's just a signal, it's nothing important at the moment, but it can be a very big signal. So we designed a social business type 2. We will create a knitwear fabric where we produce T-shirts and sweatshirts for 500 to 700 people. But this 500 to 700, this fabric will be totally new, best environment-friendly stuff. The woman gets normal employed. They are have to facing inside the framework, and then inside the economic framework, and then the profit who is done by this company stays for the woman on education, the woman having a computer, getting the best healthcare system, getting a kindergarten, getting everything done. But the profit what she makes doesn't go to Otto. The profit goes to the woman who does the daily work. So with the Otto Grameen, we try to have, we have 500,000 fabrics, and believe me, nearly every one of you have a piece at home from Bangladesh, at least one. But it's done in a way like we accept it as it is. So this fabric is a symbol to see you can do it different, you can make it in a difference, and we at least we tried. So I'm very happy because it starts, it's a project where where I think the whole misery journey starts. It is done on the whole way as we do our trading and we try to reinstall a new seater. And you can remember on the first picture what I show you, it was only a few things. After then we talked to students, the whole thing grows. So we saw, oh, it is so necessary of having the companies in, having the family-owned companies, the investor, the individuals, the public sector, the education part, media, sports, art and performance, entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs. Seeing it on the name of social entrepreneurs and social business. If I talk about social entrepreneur, I will talk about one gentleman or one woman. If I talk about business, social business, we're talking about the institution. So there's many social entrepreneurs who set up good social entrepreneur, but it's not social business. So just to be on the wording very clear. Social business is always an institution what you set up, have nothing to do with a single person. It's a system. And the public sector, we go at the moment in a beautiful project, and this is very confidential, so please don't put it on the movie, at least not the slides. So we do a holistic stuff with a region in Colombia. It's called Caldas. Caldas, every one of you maybe have already contact to Caldas, because Caldas was the heart of coffee in Colombia. And the market of coffee crashed down, though Professor Yunus went to Colombia, and the governor of Caldas asked him, hey, you can help us with different issue. So Professor Yunus calls me and say, Hans, can you go to Colombia and check it out, what's going on there? And I say, oh, Professor Yunus, to Colombia now, I have so much work in Europe, you know, setting up all these joint ventures. He calls me a second time and says, Hans, go, please go. So we went to Colombia, and we had a beautiful journey and a beautiful screening in Colombia, and we find it out. I come to a region where it's every day 12 hours daylight and 12 hours night. It's all water, is the best fruitful country what you can imagine. There's nearly 1 million people living there, but still 700,000 in the mess. I couldn't understand it, you know. There's everything what you need from the nature. You know, there's no water problem, there's 37 people per square kilometer, no overpopulation. It's the mother nature is so strong, you can't imagine, that normally they can feed the same region in Mexico, you know. From the natural stuff, they have no problem at all. So very clearly, the whole system was totally wrong set up. So what we're trying now to do is, the government of Caldas give us around 60 million. We put the 60 million in the fund of social business. So the government is out of controlling this money. We will hire 24 young Colombians who study outside of Colombia. Doctors, engineers, economics, communication people. So, and we're trying to get the people home. We give them a good job and what I call the ability generation. So the young people should manage the whole stuff. We will give them guidelines via my person, Professor Yunus, Professor Latifi, and the microfinance, but the heart of the whole nucleus will be people under 30 years old. And they have, if at least they get a job for 5 years and they stay at home, the money doesn't go via the government, the money goes via from citizen to citizen, and we do this experiment now, and we start in the beginning of the year, and this is the first private-public partnership what we try to set up there. Then we saw how important it is to create more cooperation with the academic cooperation. So we have at the FU in Berlin, we are very happy to have at the RICO University a good stuff. In the University of Glasgow, we have a pilot project with the University of Glasgow about welfare system. We find out in Glasgow we have already the third generation who lives in welfare. The third generation where never, ever one person works in the family. So we try now to find creative power, how we break this wall, that the welfare system is not pushing the people in accepting my situation and just let get them older and older and older and older. So how we can bring them out, this will be in Glasgow. We have with the California State University Channel Islands, we are on the way to build up a California Institute of Social Business. There will be not only one university, but there will be 32 universities in California. And who been to California last year, they know how shaky the whole area is at the moment, how much tension in the societies, how many people lost the trust, how many people have mental problems there, how many people have drugs problem there, stuff like this. And it's 80 different cultures living together, and this whole beautiful state is on the way to have totally redesigned. So I guess the California definitely needs social business. We have on the European Business School, we try to install a chair, and on the RGC, we have already the first chair about social business. And we're looking forward to install it at the McGill University. We really will be happy to see it have a special hub in the world about social business and the convergence on economic and health. I think this is a beautiful headline to see how we can use the economic power and healthcare together and building up a total new possibilities and share it with the rest of the world as an open source. And coming back on these pictures, you know, and seeing that sometimes 80% of this what we on healthcare in the development area, it's easy solutions. It's not big. It's not about, of course, we have a lot of other issues, but 80% is micro healthcare. And these are the pictures from the ICA hospital, what I just told you. If we do it, we try to have excellence in it, but excellence in how to manage it, how to build it up, and how to give the best service. And the ICA hospital, you're mostly welcome to visit it once in Bangladesh. It's beautiful to see, and it gives so many people beautiful hope to see. And imagine how many people run around in the world without glasses. Who wears glasses in the room? You know that nearly more than 2 billion people can't afford glasses? We have all the knowledge to give some glasses. But you know what it means without glass? Stand up, and you're 40 and 45 and you're already gone on a, just a simple way, or you're maybe even younger and you just can't afford these classes. So I guess there's enormous potential on simple solutions. And what I would like at the end to share with you is the social business aspect. It's not only something for the area in Africa or in Asia or in, never forget the second world, in Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, I pronounce this in Ukraine, enormously. It's also a huge possibility to shape our society better and to do it. So in Europe, we have something what we're starting now, the social business woman, because we figure out, I don't know, new issues in Canada, but we have an enormous challenge about single mothers, about especially women who give their whole life for the family and then they're over 40 and they're not anymore a value for the market, as we call it, you know. So what's a stupid thing? So there is an enormous lack of justice in this behind and of single mothers, I told you. And so we have a special focus on this. In Bulgaria, we start a project, it's called Estetica Bulgaria, because we saw a lot of people lose the way of aesthetic. If they lose once the way of aesthetic, ethic will be lost, and if ethic lost, corruption and criminal comes in it, so we do a special project there. And the last movie of today, what I want to show you, it's about an enormous project. It's one of the most impressive project what I discover in Europe. It's about San Patrignano. And it's a social entrepreneur. At the moment, this NGO makes only 50% of the cost. But we try together to find a way to be not at all anymore necessary to have donations. Of course, donations, when they're welcome, but they will be used in the future as an investation. But to come out of the trap, to do a good job as an NGO, and then always to go there, oh, please give me some money, oh, please give me some money, oh, please give me some money. On the high professional way, as the NGO works, we should find different ways. So San Patrignano is one example what I like to share with you, the last movie, and the movie explains by themselves.
The problem of actual drug use is the least relevant of an addict's dilemmas. At the heart of this drama is not the drug itself, nor is it the symptoms of withdrawal, but there is a man with his fears and the void by which he risks to be devoured. That's why I don't like hearing people say that ours is a community for drug addicts. Ours is a community of life, where one begins to live after years spent on the fringes of society. These are the words of Vincenzo Muccioli, San Patrignano's founder. Since 1978, San Patrignano has welcomed over 20,000 people, becoming one of the world's most important centers specializing in recovery and social integration. In 1985, San Patrignano becomes a foundation to which Muccioli and his family donate their entire estate. Vincenzo Muccioli passed away in 1995, when the community had already reached its current size. home to 1,700 young people in a drug-free long-term residential treatment program. San Patrignano is currently the world's largest facility for the recovery of drug addicts. Most of its staff and volunteers are former drug addicts who were rehabilitated at San Patrignano. Each year, San Patrignano receives thousands of requests for admittance from Italy and around the world. Of these, 600 are taken in as new residents. To them, the community offers dignity, care, and the warmth of a family. A family of 1,700 people. Upon entry, all residents undergo a general medical examination at San Patrignano's medical center and receive complete medical and psychological care for the length of their stay. The center specializes in treating all drug-related illnesses, including HIV and hepatitis. In the hospital ward, there are 50 beds distributed in single and double rooms. Patients suffering from AIDS and other drug-related conditions also arrive from outside the community. Medical care is provided completely free of charge by trained professionals, supported by a group of volunteers who offer individual assistance 24 hours a day. The center works in concomitance with the Italian National Health Service. A staff of psychologists provide support to those overcoming past traumas or who have had episodes of mental illness associated with drug use. Great emphasis is placed on dentistry, as 95% of former addicts present serious dental problems. A healthy smile is essential to regaining self-esteem and building social relationships. In order to be fully reintegrated into society, rebuild a relationship with his family, and face life as a responsible and self-sufficient individual, each resident must complete his education and acquire professional skills. As for formal education, all residents of San Patrignano have the possibility of completing their studies at any level, from primary school up to university. Through the years, the community has developed many opportunities for vocational training, ranging from agriculture and various breeding activities to information technology and graphic design. During their stay in the community, residents may choose the one that most fits their skills and needs from more than 50 professional training opportunities. Several of the high-quality products created inside the community are sold worldwide, including fine wines and gourmet food products, handmade furniture and home furnishings. Before leaving the community at the conclusion of their recovery program, all of San Patrignano's former residents are assured a job. A full 70% of them find work in the same field for which they train while living inside the community. Hours a year are dedicated to the practice of sports. There are football, basketball, and volleyball tournaments inside the community, as well as foot races. Over the past 5 years, San Patrignano has spearheaded national education and prevention campaigns against drug abuse on behalf of the Italian government, reaching over 500,000 young people between the ages of 13 and 20. Rainbow International Association Against Drugs, founded by San Patrignano in 1995, is composed of over 200 non-profit organizations from all over the world that are involved in the fight against drug abuse. Annual meetings have been held inside the community with the participation of government institutions, the scientific community, and members of the media and of civil society. Each year, San Patrignano hosts a number of events of international relevance, which are organized entirely by the young people of the community. These the FEI, European Jumping Championships, held in 2005. Is home to over 100 children under the age of 12, sons and daughters of those following the recovery program. Special areas dedicated to their growth and development have been created, and a team of educators and psychologists is on hand to offer support to the parents. Of about 60 small houses is available to those families which have been either reunited or formed inside the community by couples completing the recovery program. A total of 14,000 square meters is set apart for residential use. The community has always tried to be self-sufficient, income earned from the sale of its products and services covers fully 50% of the community's annual expenses. The balance is made up of donations from individuals, companies, and charitable organizations. The recovery program, including food and lodging, medical assistance, school tuition, and supplies, is offered completely free of charge. Absolutely no financial contributions are accepted from residents, their families, or from any public institution, saving the state about 25 million euros annually. In the 30 years since its founding, the community has attained extraordinary results in terms of relapse rate and full social reintegration. Numerous sociological and toxicological researches carried out by Italian universities have revealed that over 70% of those who have completed the program are still drug-free years after leaving the community, having been reintegrated into society and the workforce. City, but a place of transition in which men who have been considered refuse by society can learn to live freely and return to being positive elements in that same society which had rejected and poisoned them.
I know this is a movie, but I went so many times to San Patrignano, and if you see the people afterwards, if you see the thousands, not a couple, thousands of people who work in there, and you see the excellence on the work, the identity what they have. And it's mostly these people, when we go out in the corner in the street and see them and they're drinking, and we doesn't want to look to them because we give them up, you know. And when the founder of San Patrignano starts this in Rimini, very close to one of the most touristic places in Italy, you know, I can tell you it's easier to find a place for nuclear waste than the people who were drug addicts. And how much the people have to do and to force us to build it up. And it's all excellent. It's all about. And now the people, after 30 years, this is so long this project, the people come and want to hire people from San Patrignano because they know after the 3-4 years, they are the best. They are really the best in the country. So it's a beautiful example of a beautiful NGO, and we'll be working now up to 2015, then they are not any more needed to be done and be driven by donation, have to go around and say, please give me money. They doesn't accept money from the government. They want to be self-sustained. And the most thing is, if you go there as a former drug addict, you don't have to pay anything. And you know how much money is made in the US, I don't know how in Canada, but how much money is made on the shoulder of these people. So this gives you another example where social business can have an enormous power as well. Again, I'm not so much in Euro in your system, but in Europe you have an extremely stuff about debt collection and social business. We have so many people who can't pay back their whole stuff, and normally if you're once in this circle, you just get pushed down and nobody tries to push you up again. So this can be another stuff, and the wheel shows you how social business can work. You're all experts, you're young students. The people who are were born after the 80s, they know when they was born, Google was not on Earth. Maybe there's two or three people in the room who say, I do a garage startup, and in 20, 25 years, this social business is big like Google. It's possible. Definitely makeable. It's Microsoft, Steve Jobs, all these companies was not there 35 years ago. So if you're starting it today and redesign a new kind of business, and especially what I count totally on disability generation, yes, we want to do it. And maybe it will be not two men like in Google, it will be two women to say, hey, I'm clever enough to shape a business, and if you can imagine how much money Tupperware makes on Tupperware parties, and to transform the system in something who is really needed for the society. Nothing against Tupperware, but if you can turn it around in something good, there's enormous possibility to learn from the business, to do social business, and social business means business just for you. I call it of YY, it's you and you. So it means taking care about you and you, and not about myself. And why is it so important? It is normally, this is what Professor Yunus explained in the beginning, each one of us have multidimensional. You know, we are business people, we are selfish people, and we are selfless people. You know, each one of us has the selfish part to survive, to be strong, and to be proud, and to find the right sexual partner. You know, so every one of us want to be strong and want to be selfish. But every one of us have a selfless part. It's born in us. And if it's the selfless part is not part of our system, something makes us sick. And up to now, we did the whole selfless part out of the business sector. You know, we let the business as business, and we put the selfless part in NGOs, we put the selfless part into a foundation, we put the selfless part in something else, but not inside the framework of business. And social business should remain in the business, to navigate the business, to be not so greedy as we are at the moment. So if this is the important thing on social business, to be inside the business framework as a social business, to develop the selfless part of our human beings inside the business economic world and not put it outside of this. And of course, this is where we have a lot of possibilities between NGOs and others to cross into the business sector, you know, and to have more exchange on the field. Just again an overview how we see the world and what we tried, and this was done in 1 year. So we start last year in November, and we was two full-time jobs. It was Saskia and me, and we had around 8 volunteers. And in 1 year, we achieved this what stays there. So if you can imagine what you can do if you only really make a full commitment. So we set up the whole companies, so we Speers, F, Danone, Otto, Adidas, Volkswagen, SAP, Veolia, and Autostadt, who is a daughter from Volkswagen. We're starting with the universities. We're finding two foundations. We will pronounce in March with Prince Albert Social Business Fund of Monaco. We have on the public sector Caldas. We're starting now a project with Albania. We're going to the city of Milan, and we have with the city of Wiesbaden, with the NGOs. We're trying to have two NGOs, two social entrepreneurs. And I'm very happy because we will be 5 years every year on the World Economic Forum with the Grameen Creative Lab. And we also go on the Expo 2015. We signed a contract with the Expo, how we feed the world energy for life. And we are working at the moment on a cooperation with FIFA to see how we can involve the sports. And one of the staff, just because I'm here, would be love, of course, to have something at the McGill University, but also the last time when I was here was 13 years ago. I was in Montreal, and I was a talent scout for Cirque du Soleil. So I scout the best talents in Europe for them. I guess Cirque du Soleil have an enormous capacity to build up social businesses around the world and give identity around the world. So now, of course, we are not anymore two employed people. My whole company was 24 people working every day on this, and it doesn't give up. I changed all my businesses into social business. I could sell it to other big companies, and I say, no, I bring it into as a social business from the 1st of January, and we go ahead. And this is what I have to warn you again. If you once start, it's very dangerous. It makes a lot of joy and gives you a big feeling you have a meaning. And as a German guy, you know, when I was 9 years old, I get taught about the Holocaust. You know, I was in the school, and I never forget this moment out of a Bavarian village, and I come home and I ask all the oldest people in the place, what are you doing this time? What's happened with you? What's going on with you on this side, you know? Why you didn't do something? And everybody told me, you know, Hans, we didn't know it, you know, it's come slowly, and what we could do. And I know definitely when we get asked in 40 years, well, you get asked as a young, what you did in 2008 and 2009 and 2010, when we had cities like Dubai and when we had places like Prada and Gucci and all this stuff, and at the same moment we spent 10 billions of diets, and in the same moment we had 1 billion people and stuff. We can't say we didn't know it. We know it. And so this means we're searching for something where we can have a meaning to come out of this. And social business can be a part of it, to do something and to make things happen, because I totally believe we have the ability and we have the power to do something. People before us, if they want to build something like the Cheops pyramid in Egypt, they didn't have computers, they didn't have machines, they just have a belief on it. They built the Colossus of Rhodes, they didn't have all this technical issue, but they have to believe on it. Other people believe, like Martin Luther King, or like other people, or Nelson Mandela, or they believe you can change it. Or the Berlin Wall, what we just had, the celebration of 20 years Berlin Wall, where Professor Yunus gives the last message and say, the next wall to fall is the wall of poverty. Nobody, 3 months before the wall was falling, Gorbachev and Kohl talks together and say, maybe next year, next in the 21st century, maybe next the next 100 years we can talk, then the wall is falling. 3 months after, the wall is done. There's an incredible creative power in our human beings. And if we want to achieve to come to the Mars, we will do it. And if we want to achieve, and if we really want to do it, to have a world without a single unnecessary death out of hunger, we definitely can do it. I have no doubt of it. Thank you very much. Now, I come now on the question lab. So I give you now 3 minutes time of silence. 3 minutes time of silence, and I ask you please, because I don't get fee today, I just get the money for the stuff. My fee is 3 questions of you, you know. So please, if you can have now 3 minutes of a silence, and writing down the most important question that's come up in your mind. Okay? And the silence, the noble silence makes a good effort. One minute. Okay, so now I would like to ask you the same what I did in the morning. So before you give me the questions, maybe you turn around, or the neighbor, or just choose one next to you to discuss your questions. It can be 2 or 3, it doesn't matter, or 4, however it works, but discuss your question to each other. Okay? Okay, so let's talk. Ich bin so müde.
Also, ich kann nicht dabei.
Ich verliere, also ich bin so durch.
Heute Abend ist abgesagt.
Hoffentlich, ja, ich muss schlafen.
Mach mal. Mein Papi legt sich immer über den Konsumentenpartner in der Mittagspause in die letzte Reihe und schläft.
Ja, da hat er vollkommen recht. Nee, ich merke einfach, dass das Englische dann abhaut. Also.
Das ist bei mir aber auch so. Wenn ich müde bin, würde ich es alle hören.
Genau. Genau. Ja, genau, weil dann. Dann bist du auf einmal unsicher, wie spricht man es jetzt aus? Und das ist dann merke ich, wie müde ich bin, wenn ich in Englisch unter den ganzen Tag hier vorne zu stehen und dann auch noch in Englisch und dann weißt du auch noch, dass Franzosen sprechen, die Englisch reden, dann ist das total. Ja, das ist zu lang. Dann müssen wir den 7-Minuten-Film reinlegen.
I have to go, but I'm sure see you at the dinners. I'm told I'm yes. invited to all the dinners, so
yeah.
I'm sure I'll be. I won't be fasting this week.
Okay.
I'll see you at the other dinner.
Okay.
Lovely to hear you.
Bye. Thank you. Ja, der Gesamtplatinano braucht man 7-Minuten-Film statt von 15. Trotzdem wollte ich ihn zeigen, weil er für die Leute
ja.
hier.
Vor allem der macht es so gut, dass man mal einfach was anfangen kann.
Genau. Also, aber da gibt es ja den von. Das können wir gleich reintun, dass wir den 7 Minuten reintun. Ja. Aber die Taktik macht total Sinn.
Ja.
Also, die macht es einfach so. Gut. So, thank you, thank you. If ever you have to do a workshop or something like this, I did this question lab. It makes so much sense, first to write it down quietly, your questions. Secondly, you discuss it in a smaller circle, because now it's much more easier if you can ask questions. What we do now in the question lab is I try to give you on each questions and answer in 1 minute. Don't trust everything what you hear from myself. At least is this what I try to give a good answer. I don't know if I have, or maybe somebody else have a better answer, but it's at least my answer. Birgit, who is next to me, she is also from the Grameen Creative Lab. She will help me today afternoon to devise you in the right workshops and the right breakout sessions. So I'm ready to start. And I know every one of you have a question. So who wants to start? And if you want to record it, say speak in the mic. If it doesn't want to record it, just speak loudly. You know, it's not necessary to speak in the mic. But if you want to be recorded for other people, then speak in the mic. So, and I give an answer for 1 minute.
Okay, very quick question. How does the Grameen Bank or social business deal with the issue of corruption and bribery?
Yeah.
And I'm not only talking about, and we have major issues here, I'm not talking about Africa, I'm talking about even in here. How do we deal with, because this is very idyllic, the vision of it,
yeah.
But when you get down to nitty-gritty, when you get down to places where corruption is rampant or bribery is rampant,
yeah.
how does social businesses adjust to governments or to companies or to just people that are just used to bribery and corruption?
Zero tolerance. So we have zero tolerance for corruption. So if you try to set it up, if you try to do it, it doesn't accept it. Even we have to wait sometimes for a permit for 6 months or 9 months. So the guidelines and the governance is very clear. Zero. Zero, zero tolerance. If we find it out, if we do it, we have no tolerance. And it's normal business, it's hire and fire, it's gone. If we find somebody, and you know, we have hundreds of thousands of people working in the Grameen, there's no tolerance.
It's good to see you again.
Yeah.
You mentioned that 97% of the borrowers in the Grameen program in Bangladesh are female. To what do you attribute the success in this program amongst women? Because as I understand it, there's also a high representation of female borrowers in Grameen America as well.
Yeah. So basically, it's a question of experience, what the Grameen Bank find out. If you give the money to the man, the impact on the family is much lower than if you give the money to the woman. So there was a decision at the beginning to make it 50-50, but then we say, no, if a man wants to have money, he can come with the wife, and we give the money to the wife, because it was a counterculture in the culture, because woman was not used to have money in the hand. So, and if you see, before, it was only three times I divorced, then you was divorced with your husband, and the husband can kick you out. Now, the divorce rate, where we have the money lent to the woman, is nearly by zero, because a man think two or three times before he starts to say, I kick my wife out of the house.
Interesting. I just wanted to share one anecdote that one of the women, the borrowers, actually said when we asked, what has been the impact on this program on your family and in between you and your husband, the relationship? And one woman said, well, that's why Professor Yunus won the Peace Prize, because it's created a lot of peace in our family.
That's true. That's a funny one. Yeah, also, just the birth rate from the people that we have a good functional microphone goes down from 6.2 to 3.1. It makes an enormous impact, yeah.
Well, you mentioned a couple times about the global crisis in mental health, and the fact that I think you said something like 50% of people were suffering from mental illness. In your model of social business, though, you have all of these different variables and factors, including sport, art, you know, education, water, et cetera, et cetera. But what do you see is the role or partnership that can be had with spiritual and religious leaders or institutions?
We have nothing against that. I think if you're a good Christian or if you're a good Catholic, you should be not ashamed of it. If you're a good Muslim, you should be not ashamed of it. If you're a good Buddhist, be not ashamed of it.
I'm just I just want to say, especially because with so many people in poverty, their spiritual well-being is an intense source of comfort or import in how they get through their daily life.
This is a very personal question. I'm a Vipassana meditator, so I do my Vipassana meditation. Other people pray, other people do this. I think we're talking more about mindset of the people, you know, and this is a real spiritual work. But if we can change the mindset of the people, and this is where we have to work all together to put all our love into the whole issues what we have. So if we talk about spiritual, it's so much a miracle behind it. So we doesn't touch the field of the spiritual and of the miracle. We try to pronounce it as mindset, and we try to say clearly, hey, if I want to stop smoking, it's a mindset issue. You can also pronounce it as a spiritual issue, but at the end it's a mindset. So we keep in this framework. But we have nothing against all this stuff. So it's beautiful, it's there. But we focus on the business aspect.
You have so many programs that you've presented, so many partnerships, and as you said, in a very short period of time, all of this has exploded. So my question is, with all this happening, how can you ensure that that success doesn't kill the Grameen enterprise? It has been the death of many successful social-oriented enterprises in the past.
Yes. Yeah, very good questions. If you hear the whole issue as we have at the moment, it sounds big. At the end, we are less than a promille in the world economic world. But it's a promising stuff. And I guess the success factor will come if we are around 3 to 5% of the economic world, hopefully in 10 years. So what we have to see is, don't overestimate it. Yes, it's a very promising. It's a very stuff. We're talking about 40,000 cups of yogurt. But we talk about an innovation who can have the potential to really have a change. And if we are around 3 to 5%, what I think it is done in 10 years, then we have to be very clearly about the global governance. We have to be very clear how to handle success and stuff like this. But at the moment, we are not even by 3 to 5 promille of the world economic. But you're right, it will be an issue in 7 years.
Hi, my name is Annie Chow, and I'm an MBA student at McGill. I have two questions. We've seen how large corporations are involved in social business. How can I, a regular Joe or regular Joelle, be part of that? And my second question is, were there any unsuccessful stories, and what are the lessons?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, there are many difficulties, stories. And like 7 years ago, there was a big flood in Bangladesh. And, you know, everybody, or the Wall Street Journal already pronounced, now it's over with Grameen Bank. You know, that was really done because the flood takes all away, all the worries. But they stand up again. So Professor Yunus always told, don't give up, go ahead, you know, keep on going. So this is from the non-success. We have success, we redesign, we have problems, we have difficulties, we redesign it and we do, and we redesign it and then we try it again. Our aim is clear. Our aim is to eradicate poverty completely. Put it in the museum. You know, this is where poverty has to be, you know. So stand up again. Secondly, how you can do it, I always, and this is another minute on it, I always say, don't think how you can change the whole world. It's always about how you can do, you know, if you have the wish of unemployment or one single mother or whatever you want to do, try to find a way for a single person, a two person. Maybe you try to have two friends and build a constellation and then work with two or three friends on this issue. Find a model where you don't lose money and redesign it. Start small. The nature doesn't plant big trees. The nature sets seeds. So to make the doable and not dream about the impossible.
Hello, my name is Vicky Schreiber. I work with Oxfam Canada. And I have a question which relates a little bit to the idea or the challenge of finding local-specific solutions. Mm-hmm. I first knew about the Grameen work when I was working in a rural area of Amazon. We were working on biotrade partnerships with Daimler-Benz at the time, with a lot of struggles just because of the isolation. At the time, this initiative was happening on Marajo Island, which is probably about the same size and similar climate, et cetera, to Bangladesh, but very, very low density of population and very hard to get to. So there's real challenges there. Today I work in rural Mozambique. We're trying to support, through some of our partners, rural savings and credits. But there's very, very little business or bank or any kind of infrastructure there. So the question is, how do you do that? How do you reach out to those very isolated communities? And if so, or even if you have some examples of where this has worked in these difficult contexts. Thanks.
I can give you an example in Ethiopia, where basically I went in Ethiopia in a very, very, you know, really rural area. But this is a good thing, is where you have a partnership with NGOs, where there was already there for 8 or 9 years. And we see the experience from the NGO. We was working together, and then we find the right partnering. So mainly, and also mostly when we are there, we try to work with the local people. And then the local people have friendships and they have stuff. So, and we start also small and not in a big wave. So we never start in a huge wave where we come with billions or with millions of money. We always try. It's a tiny little investment of 250,000 or 300,000 or 500,000 euros or of even less, and we try to see to grow. Basically, of course, we have this good way of microfinance. So the money language is a global language.
Hi. A lot of the issues that you talk about are basic rights, basic nutrition, health, education. I'm from Bangladesh, so it makes total sense for me, the social business idea, and I understand where Dr. Yunus would come from, because our state doesn't work, the government doesn't work.
Exactly.
Things that the government is supposed to do, NGOs have to do. So when you talk about taking it global, this idea, there are many countries in Europe, as far as I know, the state has a big hand in, you know, ensuring basic rights, health and education and things like that. So if this idea does work out, how do you see the role of the state changing, or where do you see the interlinkages or complementarities?
Yeah. You know, I'm coming from Germany, and we probably have the highest, most of the highest standard in the world next to Sweden about social government. I guess we really, even we have a right, we have Raiffeisen, who was like a Yunus 150 years ago, who gave every person the ability, the access to an account. So in our country, every person has it. But still, we have so enormous challenge in our time. It can be any different challenge where the government doesn't work and where the private sector doesn't work. And this is where the citizenship and social business is a citizenship stuff. So basically, at the moment, I have government people here and I have government people there. And since the 60s, the government people from here put money to the government people there in the world. What we try to do is now to go from citizen to citizen and trust much more the citizenship in the different areas. And this maybe change the role of the government. And I'm hopeful the government concentrate on this stuff, what has to be done is first. I know in Bangladesh and in India and many other countries, having a police who is free of corruption. You know? If you have police people in your country who is free of corruption, the justice free of corruption is the first step. So the concentration, if we as a citizen in the world, global citizen, trust more to the citizen without the government, then the government can start with the principal work what they have to do. And next to education, it's definitely a good building up an honest, corruption-free police is a big value for a government.
Hi, I'm Jeff Arnold. I work with a nonprofit in Montreal that about 15 to 20% of our money is self-generated, and then the rest comes from funding different sources. And we're interested in having more money, you know, operations generated money, so becoming more of a social entrepreneurial business. And do you have some advice as to how we could approach making that shift?
Yeah. First of all, to see clearly your social objects. If you see the social objects very clear, sometimes we have to take it as a cross-subsidized, you know, to see, like in Milan, I'm working with a group at the moment to get a license of water, to sell water. So they are working on the immigration background. And now they're creating bottled water, who sell it in nearly every restaurant. And with the income of this water, it's a normal product. They make a normal business, they pay tax. But the profit of this company goes into the immigration issue. So sometimes you have to find creative ways to see what you can do, and you need business know-how in the organization. It's one example. So the cross-subsidized is a very good issue.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Denise. I'm a grad student here at McGill, and I also worked for an NGO for 2 years before I came here, so my question's coming out of that experience. You mentioned earlier that you have a zero tolerance policy to corruption. But what about cases of embedded corruption? So, for example, in countries where the state doesn't work, and the corruption isn't because of personal lack of scruples, but because they have no access to resources. And in that case, sometimes you can't even get the project off the ground without condoning corruption. Would you, in that case, relax your zero tolerance policy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good. It doesn't mean only for governments. It means also for companies or for other stuff. You know, you always have to see, like if you start with Danone or if you start with BASF or if you start with the government, we get books of complaining people why you start now with BASF. So we say, okay, this is the business what they're doing. On the Grameen BASF, we build up a new paper and we make our own rule, very wide, very clear, and there is a zero tolerance of it. The same is if we work like in Albania now, or if we will work in Colombia now, we make it very clear, everybody warns us about this governor makes, you know, you come in one country and you directly get 50 people who give you a warning, don't work with them, you know. It's a habit of us humankind. So if I work with you, she will say, don't work with her, you know. She has something wrong on it. But if we start to work together, we build a new frame, and in this new frame, we from the Grameen side taking care that this frame is free. And if we see something wrong, totally wrong, we always can take away our name, and then we take it away.
So you take away your name so that you can relax the policy?
Yeah. All that we can do is to demonstrate it by demonstration. Then it works. And if we see something goes totally wrong, you know, something where we can't make a cooperation, we always have the right to take away the Grameen name.
But you will still continue working in that country? Or you just give up because corruption is too big a problem there?
If we can't make a general answer to it, you know, if we see suddenly what's never happened, but if we will see now Danone turn around in a total grit way and we can't have any identification anymore, I don't know what we will do, but Danone is on a good... The same is for a government, the same is for something else. So, of course, we would not have... I think Professor Yunus makes a very individual decision. You know, he analyzed the situation as it is. For him counts what's the result for the poorest of the poorest. So it's not an easy question. You can't give an answer black or white. We will observe it, we make it clear, and then we make a decision on it. But the principle of zero tolerance stays. It doesn't, inside the framework, no tolerance. What our partner doing in the other business, we look for it and we see what we have to do. I make maybe one thing on, because it's maybe easier on the corporate world. In the beginning, 2 years ago, Professor Yunus didn't allow me to start to talk with Siemens because they had such a high corruption affair. So now he was waiting, then the whole corruption was on a certain point, and now we start with Siemens Medical Solutions to negate. So he have a very clear model where it can work and where it cannot work. Same for government.
Hi, I'm Matthew Pritchard. I'm also a grad student here at McGill. And I'm interested in how you can or think about opening up this model to individuals beyond those with enough initial wealth and capital to face the risks of investment without the possibilities of return. This especially draws on the fact that you said, or as Professor Yunus said, that everybody is born with this sort of social incentives. But we haven't really acknowledged that not everybody has the capability to invest on that or in that.
Yeah. See, in the beginning, a lot of people do the selfless part on a side job, you know? Like Professor Yunus had a clear income as a professor in the University of Chittagong. He was working there 9 hours, 10 hours, but the other 2-3 hours a day, he was working on the selfless part of social business. So it's sometimes you have to make a compromise to find a way. Other people set up, it's always about your personal constitution if you have the entrepreneur power in it. It's not a question of money. It's a question of a will. Money is not the issue. It only seems like to be the issue. But money is not. Money will come if you have the right attitude and you don't give up.
So it's time then. Is it time that's the issue?
I've searched for the right word in English. It's a strong commitment.
Okay.
My name is Scott Baker. I'm a student at McGill as well, an undergraduate student. My question is in regard with projects such as the Danone partnership, and if you can imagine any sort of risks of having a community that's so reliant on one product and in that way reliant on a company or a corporation, and like both on their product and on their commitment to the good cause. So I don't know if you understand what I mean, but if Danone decided to leave because they were in economic tough times, their yogurt goes and there's no food industry within the community. I was wondering if you could speak to risks of that happening. And just a small question is, if you had the numbers on the success rate of the America microfinance program, because it's 97% return rate in worldwide or Bangladesh. I was curious what the numbers were for America were.
I guess I got these two questions. So first of all, you have to see Grameen Danone is our own company. And the knowledge of Danone is in this company. Even Danone says they give it up, the Grameen Danone will stay ahead. So we have the knowledge. And it's our own independent company. And they can grow by their own. That we doesn't need Danone. And we are already on diversity of our products. So we have not only one product, we test other products at the moment. So Grameen Danone is a totally independent owned company. So we are not, even Danone will be disappear because the takeover of Nestle, they can't take over Grameen Danone.
Okay?
Okay?
Cool.
But I guess more Danone will take over Nestle. So he recorded, so I shouldn't talk so much about it. So, no, but it can't, it just overstress it a little bit. So, Grameen Danone, if takeover will happen, you can't take over Grameen Danone. This gives you the best. And the knowledge stays in the social business. Cool. Secondly, the figures of Grameen America, I just please ask you to Google it because they have daily report and Stephen Vogel comes tomorrow and I don't want to talk nonsense or stupid stuff now. But it's a beautiful story.
Okay.
And they're very public, so you can study it. It's 1,500, and they even opened now the first branch on the California coast side. So it goes to whole America. And I hope there's somebody here to start Grameen Canada.
Thank you.
Hi, here is Grameen Canada. Yeah, my name is Mohammed also, but not Yunus. But I'm the same city from Mr. Yunus. I've been living here the last 24 years. Actually, I've been wondering, I'm coming one of the third of countries like Bangladesh, the poorest country in the world, one of the richest countries in the world. So I'm wondering the question here, why the soup kitchen here? Why the poverty here? Why people in the welfare state here? So I see my last 26 years, I haven't improved my quality of life. So does my fellow. I don't say them immigrant or South Asian immigrant living in the under the poverty level. So asking those questions, I have opportunity to meet a few times Mr. Yunus. So I try to replicate Grameen model to here in actually in Montreal. I've been trying to work on that last 10 years basically, inspired by his book Banker to the Poor. Finally, the question come when the come social business in place, when I heard very interesting Grameen Creative Lab. So this is the very inspiring also when I see that. Now my question is, in the grassroots level, people like who don't see this kind of environment or see, people live in a poverty area like a Park Extension who lives in Quebec or Montreal or the Pointe-Saint-Charles or Côte-de-Neige, Plamondon area, if the people know this neighborhood. There's the people actually need this social-based business. So how does Grameen Creative Lab help those initiatives, people in grassroots levels, come to open up their social businesses? And also in that point of the question, here in Quebec, I don't know if some of you know the social enterprise, they call it social economy. The social economy based on basically there's a lot of programs, government programs, and local initiatives. You mentioned citizen to citizen. I think that's the roots we should take in. To bridging that gap, social program and government's programs, also the citizen initiatives. So in taking that initiative, how to Grameen Creative Lab helps in terms of technical support, in terms of capital. It says money is not comes, but it's enough passion and work hard, empowerment. The money is that's why the microcredit tools help people to create their empowerment. So I think the money play a role in their big aspect. So people who doesn't have, to have the get those conventional banks to get their credit, to get this start, how the Grameen Lab help this issues.
Okay, good. Yeah, good. So first of all, I'm always happy to talk to people from Bangladesh because the story, what I see, what's coming up is after years, after the 60s, when we start the aid programs around the world, we're always thinking in the Western world and the development world, oh, we have to do something to help other people. And the story now, a bunch of people from Bangladesh, from one of the poorest countries in the world, educate us how to do it. If we have the right attitude and the right way to go down, to go and to talk to them and ask them about simple solutions. So basically, it's all about the story now, the Bangladeshis coming to help us to develop our social and societal issue what we have. Second is on the Grameen Creative Lab. Grameen Creative Lab is our own social business in himself. What we're trying to do is always to share our knowledge so much as possible. Like, this is why we are here today, to train the trainer, to be very open source about what's going on. Secondly, of course, we would like to inspire the people to set up the venture capital in their own framework, in their own society. Canada have enough money. There's not a lack of money in this country. There's only the lack of social activities, if some problem is here. So it's not a lack of money, because you have the biggest beautiful natures in the world, and you have the biggest resources in the world. So money should not be the problem of you. The issue in the Grameen Creative Lab, we can't offer money to you. But what we are doing is we talk to the people to learn the symbol and to do it. And I have to repeat it again. This is not to overestimate. It's the beginning of something. We try it out. We give it a fair chance. We are not even a promille of the economic world. But it's a very promising stuff. And like you establish a forest, you need your time to grow. But if we start today, to be clear, then we reinforce our societal issues, then in 10, 15, or 20 years, the people have a different circumstance. So, and I guess the days today and the days tomorrow, and if we are able to install it at the McGill University, a chair of social business, all the young students get in contact with them, and they will make a breakthrough. Like it's with the help of the next generation, they will make it. They also invent iPod Touch, and they invent all this crazy stuff what we doesn't know anymore. They will take the information, install it in the next generation, and make it up.
Hi, my name is Yao Pebi, originally from Ghana, and yeah. I was happy to see Ghana on your slide.
Yeah, me too. I'm always happy with Ghana.
Yes, I trained as a medical doctor, currently not practicing clinical medicine because I realized that there were bigger issues that were bringing people into the consulting room, mainly mindset issues, social issues, economic issues. So I'm very excited about the economic and the health platform of McGill and this program. One of the things I've heard from colleagues in the corporate world, and I'd like you to address this, they'll tell you that the model of corporate business itself has a social component. Rubbish this whole social business idea, because they'll tell you, well, we're providing jobs and we're providing livelihoods. The products we make are helping people in society. There's a social component of our business. On top of that, we have corporate social responsibility. What will you say to such, and I have several CEO friends who say things like that. What will you say to such a person coming from this social business paradigm?
That's good. Many of these companies are doing good stuff, like doing their stuff. But it's see where it's guided, you know, and where we are at the moment. So we are on the mess, and we see the whole issue about littering. You know, only one example about the littering issue about our packaging material around the world. You know, there's a whole ocean out next to San Francisco who was big 5 years ago, big like Bavaria. A year later, it was big like Germany, and now it's big like Europe. So we have an issue, but the corporate world is not complete. What we have to do is to scale it up, you know, and we have to use, there's so many ideas in the corporate world who people have to stop it because it doesn't get the ROCE, the return of capital invest, over 15% or over 11%. So it means there's so many good ideas who can have an enormous impact on the social issue, but you don't following up because it's not enough return of capital invest. The corporate world doesn't make the question, what is enough? You know? What is enough? So the social business guides them to think a little bit about what's enough. You know, if a 28-year-old, a 29-year-old woman comes to me and I say, hey, $250,000 monthly yearly income is not enough, I have to ask her, is something wrong in your mind? You're 28 years old. You have no family, no mother, no stuff. And you think $250,000 a year is not enough? Yeah, others get $350,000. Wow. You know, the question where we have to come on the whole, what is enough? And I think what we did to the interface to the nature, we did enough. And we have to reinstall it. So I know that, and second is, they do a lot of corporate social responsibility stuff, but they give it into a charity, into a One Life that doesn't invest themselves. And, you know, if I once have the idea to go to Ghana and to see a village, how they develop, and I have a personal contact, and I know them, and I see them growing up, and there are, I have a personal relation, my daily work in my corporation is totally different than before. So, yes, we need more interactive between the corporate world and the selfless part. They're all self-centered. They're only, how many people will stop to work tomorrow if they doesn't have the bonus anymore? How many people accept paying money monthly, you know, to survive? So something is, we need navigation to guide them in the right direction. What's the time now? Doesn't want to... Two questions and then we go for a joy hour. Lunch.
Hi, my name is Fikri Francis. I started some 8 years ago a committee of microfinancing inspired by Professor Yunus' example. And they have now achieved some more than a thousand and a few hundred, 900 projects. People who got free interest loans, started a business, and paid back. And the money was recycled, and that's how it started. The seed money came from an organization here in Montreal, Coptic Aid Foundation. But I noticed that on the map, there was no representative of the Grameen in Egypt. But
Egypt.
In Egypt, yes.
Yeah.
But there seems to be Jamil Mina or some kind of organization associated with the Grameen Bank. My question is, we would like to have more communication and association with the Grameen Bank to benefit from their experience. And maybe we can benefit them, telling them what the needs in Egypt are, what are our failures and successes. And I would like to leave this with you. And there are two.
Thank you.
You can contact us, and we can see where we can take it from there. Thank you very much. It was very inspiring today.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, to give you an answer. There is, as maybe you know, there's every year the Microcredit Summit, who will be held from the 7th to the 9th of April in Kenya next year. And this is the best, the Microcredit Summit is the best overview about microcredits around the world. And the Grameen Bank have a Grameen Dialogue, and they have now working really hardly and have a good communication via the internet. So you have monthly report, monthly exchange. Just write an email to Professor Latifi, and you get an answer. Maybe it takes you a month or two, but they answer nearly every question at the moment. So you have to see that doesn't get money to answer it, so this is why it takes, and they're getting asked all over the world. We have requests per day between 300 and 1,500 every day. People ask Professor Yunus to come to speech, to make, you know. So it's an enormous need around the world. But the internet, YouTube, all the stuff, and Grameen America, Vida Jürgensen, and Mr. Stephen Vogel, who live in New York City, they are very good connected with them. And then in Egypt, I know the situation a little bit in Egypt. It's about the government, about the stuff. Many local governments makes it, as a rule, the microfinance can be only done by governments.
We did it without.
Yeah, very good. Please.
Wie geht's?
Es geht gut. Ich habe Hunger. I'm hungry. No, I'm happy to be here.
So am I. I'm Ryan Al-Rabi, a strategic public relations professional. I have two questions that I'm curious about. What is the link between fair trade and the social business concept you're presenting? I feel like they're too similar to be independent.
Between fair trade and?
Social business.
Oh, big one. Very big one. I give you, after the break, because this takes me 3 minutes, I give you a big story about fair trade and about social business. Fair trade is, it's a little different, but I can't give it in one answer, in 1 minute, this answer. I take 3 minutes. But anyway, we have to come back, and I will start with this story after the stuff on the fascinating story about coffee, fair trade coffee and normal coffee, and then we go into breakout session.
Just second question. I'm wondering, is this Grameen concept meant to be applied in countries where there's no war? What if you have a war situation? Can these social businesses be born anyway?
We have the situation in Afghanistan, and we have the situation in... it's always supposed what is war, you know. We are open to talk to everybody, and like the last time when we went to Colombia, you know, everybody warns us, hey, Colombia, you know, it's the most criminal stuff, and my colleagues and myself, we was always around some buttons. What we have to say, if we fight without violence, of course, against poverty, it's a fight. And not only Professor Yunus, a lot of people risk their daily life on them, you know. But these are the most dark side of human beings where we go against it. And of course, it needs the risk also, the risk to lose your life. So if you mean this, yes, we are in many, many situations. We go against the most corrupt people, the most cruel people in the world. You know, there is people who use children to make it to a soldier. And they teach them with 10, 11 years. They just take these 20 children, and then they're all from one village, and then you have to stand up and you shoot her, even if she's your friend. And if you doesn't shoot her, I shoot you, and then I give the weapon to you, and then you shoot her. So there's an enormous hate in our mind. And fighting against this is a war. But peaceful, no violence, full of love, full of joy, this is the only way. But the people who do it, I know they are very aware of the risk to life, like many other NGOs. And it's a deeply risk. But somebody, it has to be done. Otherwise, it's go on. It's multiplicated. And the next generation live in the same mess like we live today in that problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good. So, before we make a break, after the lunch, we meet us again here. Who will stay for the afternoon, just to see a little bit? Oh, good, good. So we will meet us here, and then I ask you in which workshops you like to do. So I'm not so much German, so I don't go straight forward in this track. If I feel we have to do more on Quebec issue or more on international issue or more on the free zone, so I'm open. We have 4 different workshops prepared. So come back after the lunch, and then we make a good split in between the group. And now I wish you a bon appetit, and we see us right at 1:45, huh?
Yeah. Thank you.